I don't have very much time to talk, so I'm going to make introductory comments very, very quick. Several of the speakers here mentioned at the beginning of their talks how they saw Ray and Stu in exotic and very nice places like Trieste or Sicily. I think we were at a meeting in Portofino together where we sat on the docks and Melbourne. So I have a question. Why is this in Toronto? Okay. Second comment is that Ray and I have very similar backgrounds. In fact, we went to graduate school in the United States in the 60s. We emigrated to Canada. I in the 70s. You in the 70s also? 69. Okay. A little before me. Both trained in chemical physics. And in fact, along the way, we have actually worked on many very similar problems. And recently, under the auspices of MITAX, we've collaborated together. So I have great admiration for, I don't know Stu very well, but certainly have had very great admiration for Ray and his research for many years, and it's a true honor to be invited to talk here. And then the third thing is, if I look at this title, Lattices and Trajectories, a Symposium of Mathematical Chemistry in honor of Ray Cuprell and Stu Whittington, you could say, what's this doing in this symposium? But then, if you say 65 years old, okay, so in this talk is not going to be very technical. I hope that I will tell everybody here something that they will understand and will be at least a little bit interesting, one or two new things. So first I have to give a little bit of an introduction to cardiology. Once again, I'm not a cardiologist, but a statistical chemist by training, and then I will try to describe what I call the sudden cardiac death challenge. So this is the basic picture of the heart. So it's necessary to know that this is a pacemaker, part of heart muscle that sends off periodic waves, more or less periodic, that go down through the upper chambers of the heart, the atria, go into the lower chambers, the ventricle, only electrically connected in one region called the AV node, and then invade the ventricles, leading to the contraction of the heart. For many years, since the beginning of the last century, this has been monitored by an electrocardiogram, and these little bumps on the electrocardiogram are associated with the cardiac cycle. The P wave is associated with the time when the atria contract. The QRS complex is associated with the beginning of the contraction in the ventricles. And the T wave is associated with the relaxation of the ventricles ready for the next heartbeat. So that was a schematic picture. This is a real picture from a real person. And here is P wave, QRS complex, T wave. And then we have this bizarre shaped complex. This is called a premature ventricular complex. And that's something that's arising from the ventricles. It's not arising from the normal place where heartbeats are originating. So this is one of these abnormal complexes. And such complexes are extremely common. Probably everybody in the room has had them, and some people might have them quite commonly. And in general, they're considered to be quite benign. But in some cases, you have situations that look like this. So this is an electrocardiogram from an 82-year-old woman who was wearing a device recording her heartbeat, electrocardiogram, at the time she actually died. So here's at 3:42 in the afternoon, and here's one of these premature ventricular complexes. These are the normal beats. Premature ventricular complex is just two over here. At 4:05, there was an alternation between normal beats and these premature ventricular complexes. And then there's a short sequence in which there's what's called non-sustained ventricular tachycardia, a sequence of several of those beats, one right after another, which spontaneously stopped. But then at 7:13, there's this alternation between the normal beats and the abnormal beats once again. Then there's a sequence of non-sustained ventricular tachycardia that's a little longer, a normal beat, and then ventricular tachycardia, which essentially killed that person. So there's a question, why did this person die at this point in time, and it didn't happen a little bit earlier? So from a point of view of nonlinear dynamics, from a point of view of basic science, I find this to be really, really a fascinating question. And I don't know the answer, and I don't think anybody does at the moment. So the definition of sudden cardiac death is the sudden abrupt loss of heart function in a person who may or may not have diagnosed heart disease. The time and mode of death are unexpected at that particular point in time. So it could be somebody who's known to have heart problems, but they're not expected to die at that point. So two questions. Can we predict who has a high risk of sudden cardiac death? And if we could we prevent the sudden cardiac death? So the answer to the second question is easier than the first. So there's something that's called an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. This is a device that's put under the skin. There's contacts that go into the heart. And this is meant to detect an abnormal rhythm that would cause death. And if it detects that, it's supposed to give a shock to the heart that would restore the normal rhythm. So the question that people would ask is, okay, does that work? And here's the answer. Okay? So why is this person smiling? Is this person smiling because his policies are functioning very well? No. He's smiling because he has an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. He's had several heart attacks, and he's at high risk for sudden cardiac death, according to his physicians. So he has one of these devices. So we don't know whether it's ever gone off or so forth. Okay. So in Canada, an estimated number for the number of people meeting current criteria for getting one of these is about 100,000. The total number that have been treated so far, about 15,000. Total number untreated, about 88,000. New implants is about 4,500 per year. New implants per million, 141. This is from data that I got out of something in 2005. There are a lot of people who, according to current criteria, should be getting this or could be getting this, might be eligible, but are not getting it. But, of course, that's because the current criteria are extremely, extremely broad and are broader than what's really probably efficacious for all of those people. So how do physicians decide who should get one of these things? So they generally do very big clinical trials. Okay. An observation which you can accept based on the earlier slide is that premature ventricular complexes are often associated with increased for sudden cardiac death. They often incur with increased frequency before sudden cardiac death. So you can make a hypothesis that if you reduce the number of these by giving a drug, then you would reduce the incidence of sudden cardiac death. So you can do an experiment. And the experiment is to give 750 people a drug that reduces the incidence of this, and you can give 750 people nothing, give them a placebo, and you can count the number of people who die as a function of time. Okay? That's hypothesis-driven research. Okay? Chemists don't necessarily demand that you say, what's your hypothesis if you do a grant, but in the CIHR medical research, if you don't say what's your hypothesis, then you don't get the grant. So that's the hypothesis. Here's the experiment. These are the people who took the drug. This is the survival as a function of time. There are about 70 or 80 extra deaths in the people who took the drug. That is, the hypothesis was disproved. Physicians will no longer give you a drug to reduce the number of premature ventricular complexes. So the main flaws of these trials is they do not elucidate the mechanisms of the arrhythmias. A significant improvement in one arm of the trial would lead to that treatment for all individuals meeting selection criteria. In, ignoring individual physiological differences, and there is a strong economic incentive for broadly defined classes, not to think about what's happening in individual patients. So there are several different topics I could talk about of basic science approaches. I'm just going to tell you one, which to me is probably one of the most amusing ones that we've done. And in a longer talk, I would give some more details. So this one is called parasystole. Here's an electrocardiogram of a patient who has this rhythm called parasystole. These are now the normal beats. These are the premature ventricular complexes. This is the theoretical model for this arrhythmia. There's a normal pacemaker generating a regular rhythm. There's an abnormal pacemaker generating this abnormal premature ventricular complexes. If the abnormal rhythm falls during the refractory period of the heart, you don't see that abnormal beat. If it falls outside of the refractory period, you see that abnormal beat. And if they occur at exactly the same time, you see some complex which is a fusion from both of those beats. So based on that, anybody here would be able to go ahead and would be able to do a simulation of that rhythm. One of the things you, or even analyze it theoretically, which I'll show you in a second, one of the things you can do is count the number of normal beats between abnormal beats. In this case, you see there are four, one, two, three, four normal beats, two normal beats, and one normal beat. So based on this mechanism, you could get a sequence of integers which tell you the number of normal beats between abnormal beats as a function of time. So, and you can then analyze this. This is actually a problem, a classical problem in number theory. It can be extended a little bit in terms of thinking about things. But in that set of rules, you can count the number of sinus beats between ectopic beats to get that sequence of integers. In that sequence, there are three integers. For example, 1, 2, and 4 are three different integers. One of them is odd, one is an odd number, 2 and 4 are even, and the sum of the two smaller is 1 less than the larger. So 1 plus 2 is equal to 3, which is 1 less than 4. Moreover, given the three parameters, the refractory time, the sinus cycle length, and the cycle length of that abnormal beat, you can see, you can predict exactly what those sequences of numbers are going to be. And, for example, that record that I showed you is someplace in this particular region over here. So, let's see. You can, okay, 3 minutes? Okay. So, you can do a representation of the heartbeat, which tries to show the changes. And without going into the details, I don't have any details, just get a mental gestalt of this. This is a summary of a 24-hour record of a patient that has that particular arrhythmia. Just get a gestalt of it. The good news and the bad news about this rhythm, I think we really understand that rhythm. It's generally considered a benign arrhythmia. It does not kill people. Only a small percentage of people with extra heartbeats with frequent PVCs appear to have this particular mechanism, and cardiologists do not care about this arrhythmia at all. So I have an anecdote, which I'm going to kill almost all of my remaining time. Does anybody here know David Newman, who's a cardiologist here? Anyway, he's a very good cardiologist in Toronto. When he was in San Francisco, he invited me to give a talk about this work. He heard about this work, invited me to give a talk. I was wined and dined and so forth. At the end of this talk, the chief cardiologist got up and said, "This is nothing more than mental masturbation." Okay? And the reason for that is it's not particularly helpful for what they have to do from a point of view of cardiologists. Now, if you think of the mental gestalt here, here's mental gestalt of another patient, which I will say looks completely different from the preceding patient. And this is a patient who did die from sudden cardiac death. Here is German Shepherd dogs that are susceptible to sudden cardiac death. Here is this representation which looks extremely similar to that particular patient that died from sudden cardiac death. And we believe that there's a particular mechanism that's associated with this particular arrhythmia in these particular patients. I will not try to go into the details of that. So the challenge for cardiology, I believe, is to develop a deeper understanding of events that precede fatal arrhythmias with the view of better predicting those at risk for sudden cardiac death. Since the bifurcations to fatal arrhythmias may be different in different people, this requires analysis of ECG records of many individual patients. This is a highly maligned activity. That is, it is very hard to fund, and it is actually very hard to publish. And the role of mathematical models and simple model experimental systems is actually not yet evident. So despite a lot of research in mathematical models in physiology and cardiology, there's so far not very good practical applications that have resulted from that. There have been many people who have been worked with over the years. This particular work on these heart prints, especially Ari Goldberger and Claudia Lerma, and then were funded by many research agencies. So thanks very much. So there are several different possible mechanisms for the PVC. It can come from a pacemaker. In that parasystole, yes, it comes from a pacemaker in the ventricle. There can also be, for some patients who have had a heart attack, there can also be a pathway that goes through the ventricles, which, so that the excitation